May it please the court, my name is Skip Morgan. I am the counsel for the appellant Matthew Keenan in this case. Over 9 years ago, Matthew Keenan, a college-graduated manager with Quest, suffered a catastrophic brain injury at a medical facility in Boulder and was left in a coma which lasted for over 2 months. There was some question as to whether he would survive. While he was in that coma, his parents undertook to begin a guardianship and a conservatorship on his behalf, and two trusts were established with the proceeds for the settlement with the facility, a income trust and a special needs trust. In early 2002, Matthew Keenan emerged from his coma. He was able to communicate only at first by blinking his eyes, but gradually restoration of speech and hearing and some motor function came back. It was, Your Honors, little short of a miracle. Today, he is free of the guardianship that was established from him. He has a conservator with whom he has an amicable and mutually supportable relationship. He is fully independent. He drives himself. He goes to school. He is learning a trade in the jewelry business. This happy circumstance, unfortunately, is in spite of, and not because of, his former conservator, appellee, Colorado State Bank and Trust.
Did the bank have three separate accounts, two trusts, and then is there a third account over which it was the conservator? Were there only two trust accounts?
Your Honor, the bank was the conservator and I suppose owned in the umbrella fashion the trustees for both of the trusts. It was also the trustee for the special needs trust, which is the trust into which most of the proceeds from the settlement went. There's also an income trust which protects him from Medicaid, qualifies him for Medicaid by taking his income, in this case it was Social Security, and his Quest disability income, and that is to go into another or income trust from which he was allowed $1,869 a month so as not go over the income limits. That trustee remained his mother. So the Colorado State Bank and Trust was the trustee for the special needs trust and was the conservator overseeing both.
Thank you.
This battle began in June of 2007 when Mr. Keenan, newly married and armed with a host of endorsements from psychiatrists, psychologists, and therapists and providers who all agreed that he no longer met the statutory qualification for cognitive disability, filed his pro se petition with the Boulder Court in June of 2007. This pro se petition kicked off the battle, the culmination of which is here today in front of this court, because the Colorado State Bank and Trust, the day following Matthew Keenan's filing of his petition, filed a motion, got itself a lawyer, and filed a motion for a change of venue, not to Matthew Keenan's home county, but rather to the bank's home county in Denver. So this case presents two issues, and I want to spend most of my time on the first, because the second is controlled to a large measure by the first, and that issue is, to what extent, if at all, can a fiduciary act, as the bank did in this particular case, to block, obstruct, and interfere with an individual's effort to be restored to capacity and to his civil rights here in Colorado? The second issue, having to do with $222,000 in attorney fees, is in large measure, as I said, controlled by the second, and that is whether it is fair when a bank does do what the bank did in this case to then assess, in addition, attorney's fees against the individual who successfully seeks the restoration of his rights.
Mr. Morgan, on this first issue, I want to see if I understand this. Are you saying that, let's back up, the court found that the bank acted in good faith here in contesting this matter. Use words like block, obstruct, etc. But there's a factual finding the bank acted in good faith. Is it your position that the bank acting in good faith still may not contest a petition such as that here? It simply may not contest it because it's fiduciary.
It is my position, Your Honor, that the lower court erred in using the good faith standard. That good faith standard derives from 1514.117.3, which has to do with litigation by a fiduciary on behalf of a protected person or lab or word. And my position is that when you litigate against that individual, that particular portion of the statute does not apply. So my answer to your question, Your Honor, is yes, we are contending that except in very narrow circumstances, it is always wrong for a fiduciary to litigate against its client. And further to that, the National Guardianship Association, which should not be understood to be limited to guardians of the person and guardians of the estate, is what they call conservators, is unequivocal in answer to your question that it is a breach of fiduciary duty for a guardian to litigate against the client or the ward, or to do anything to resist his or her efforts to be restored to capacity.
And that's true even if the fiduciary believes that it is in the client's best interest, apparently. I mean, the fiduciary has an obligation to act in the best interest of Mr. Keenan in this case. So if the bank believes it is in his best interest not to remove it as conservator, you're saying they somehow breached their fiduciary duty?
I'm saying that there are two standards for acting so-called in the best interest of an individual. Our law is very clear that the fiduciary, the guardian or conservator, is to effectuate the wishes and to maximize, in fact our statutes say that, efforts towards restoration and freedom and sovereignty and independence of action. And it is only in the extraordinary circumstances where that represents, and I'll use words from a different context, a clear and present danger to that individual that we fall out of that. And an example that I would like to give is our own code of professional responsibility. Rule 1.14 deals with the client as a potentially cognitively impaired individual. And even in that situation, where one is cognitively impaired, the lawyer must see an imminent danger of serious harm to the client before that lawyer can take action to bring, that is to say, to oppose, if you will, his own client's freedom in protective proceedings.
Mr. Morgan, was there any benefit to Mr. Keenan by the bank insisting that it should control his financial decisions?
Your Honor, no, there was not. And here's why I say that. The bank has yet to point to a single benefit from the continuation of the conservatorship, much less having itself as the conservator. In 2005, there was an original petition to terminate the conservatorship and bankruptcy and guardianship by his former counsel, Eric Solem, in which Mr. Solem said there would be no danger to Mr. Keenan's finances because those two trusts would remain in place. The conservatorship was not necessary, as the bank has alleged, to preserve his entitlement to Medicaid. So there was no benefit, but there was a considerable loss because, as the court is well aware, the bank spent tens of thousands of Mr. Keenan's money to resist first the termination of the conservatorship and then its own substitution.
There is a conservatorship currently.
Yes, Your Honor. There remains a conservatorship in place in this situation.
So the bank didn't act frivolously in saying there should continue to be a conservatorship. Isn't the issue here really whether the bank should continue as conservator?
That was part of the issue, to be sure, because at the October hearing in 2007, the court, after having spent a lot of money, the court dismissed the guardian over Matthew's objection because there was still some $16,000 in payments that the bank had made to the guardian and to her attorney, for which there was no indication of benefit and there were no invoices. But so the court then said, with leave of Matthew Keenan, he would continue the conservatorship because the court decided it did not have to decide whether or not Matthew Keenan required a conservator anymore, given that he said he admitted that he needed still a trustee or a conservator at that case, in that particular situation. But he was very clear it should not be the bank. So clear that, in fact, his physician and his attending physician and his neuropsychiatrist said that the bank's relationship with him, the adverse situation, was positively impairing his recovery.
So I take it, Mr. Morgan, that your position is the bank here should have said, Mr. Keenan, you need a conservator. Who do you want to act as conservator, and we'll cooperate with that person and turn over the finances to that conservator?
I think that's what the bank should have done in this case. We asked that the bank resign voluntarily to avoid the litigation, and of course they refused to do that. But a fiduciary, as a lawyer, if we're fired, our duty is to turn over the case file as much as possible to our successor and to see to it that the client is well represented. The bank should have no less of a duty.
Well, let's get back to that. I mean, the motion was to terminate the conservatorship. The conservatorship was not, in fact, terminated. As you said, it continues to this day. So how could the bank be acting in any way against your client's interest if your client ultimately concedes he needs a conservator?
Your Honor, Mr. Keenan never conceded that he needed a conservator. And that's an extraordinarily important factual point in this. What he said was, and he says so to this day, I need to have help with my finances. I know that I need help with my finances. It can be a conservator or it can be a trustee. Rather than continue the litigation, I have no reason to contest a conservator as long as this is not the bank. The bank's own expert that Mr. Keenan paid close to $10,000 for himself said that Mr. Keenan needed a conservator and or a trustee. As this court, I'm sure, is well aware, the preference is always for the least restriction on the individual. A conservatorship is a deprivation of civil rights, and it should not be understood as anything else.
Well, but to this day, your client consents to a conservatorship.
Actually speaking, that's we would be moving very shortly when this is resolved to terminate that conservatorship, Your Honor. It has been continued simply because this case has proceeded forward, and removing the conservatorship in the middle of it would have probably muddied the waters. But he consented to continuation of the conservatorship. That is certain. Whether that was a benefit to him, there is no benefit. And it cost him close to $300,000. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. Spencer Crona, registration number 18754. Appearing on behalf of Colorado State Bank, the appellee. May it please the court, parties, and counsel, a conservator is duty-bound in Colorado to serve the best interests of the protected person, a person whom a court has determined functionally unable to manage those matters in an effective way in administration of his or her financial and business affairs, particularly when a professional or institutional conservator brings such special skills to bear. There is a heightened obligation to maintain the conservatorship and not abandon the protected person where a qualified evaluator has identified the ongoing need for the conservatorship. Such qualified evaluator was appointed in this case, not as an appointee of the bank's choice, but as an appointee of the court, the trial court, upon motion and consideration of those motions. In this case, the conservator must serve the protected person's best interests, even when manifestations of a severe traumatic brain injury cause conflict with those interests. if the protected person demands termination, the conservator duty becomes more of a challenge. Because of the dilemma between serving the protected person's best interests and simultaneously being accused of adversity toward the protected person. In this case, Your Honors, there has been an assumption of opposition to the extent that Colorado State Bank requested an evaluation of whether the conservatorship should continue in the aftermath of Mr. Keenan's petitions for termination. That is not adversity toward him, but service for his best interests. The conservator is duty-bound, we suggest, to determine and investigate whether maintenance of the conservatorship is appropriate in the aftermath of a petition to terminate. We further suggest that pursuant to CRS 1514-417, the benefit rule, even though we've argued that benefit rule does not apply to determination of Colorado State Bank's fees. If it did apply, there was a benefit to Mr. Keenan through the maintenance of the conservatorship. 417.1 speaks in terms of a benefit including a protective order. And we suggest that the court's order maintaining the conservatorship after a hearing of October 15, 2007 was just such a protective order and therefore did serve as a benefit to Mr. Keenan's best interest because he continued to need that conservatorship.
Mr. Connell.
Yes, Your Honor.
But there are two pieces here. The bank contested termination of the conservatorship, but the bank also contested termination of the bank as conservator. That second piece, that's pretty troubling. Obviously, the bank is not the only person or entity that is capable of acting in Mr. Keenan's best interest in being the conservator. And yet, the bank here fought, notwithstanding the obvious animosity between the two, fought tooth and nail to remain as the conservator. How do you justify that on behalf of the bank?
Your Honor, we believe that you have to place consideration of the bank's resistance to being removed within context. At that time, in the aftermath of the October 15, 2007 hearing on termination of conservatorship, the conservatorship was maintained, but thereafter, several motions were filed, a motion for appointment of successor conservator, and later a motion for judgment on the pleadings on behalf of Mr. Keenan that alleged substantial mental and physical harm to him related to the bank remaining in position as conservator. Now, that raises an issue of fault, raises an issue of breach of fiduciary duty. The bank has a right to defend its service. And indeed, a hearing was set on that issue of removal on March 8th of 2008. So there were three factors to consider for the bank at that time. One, the fact that a hearing had been set for March 8th, 2008. Two, the allegations vilifying the bank, alleging substantial harm, allegations as to which the bank had a right of discovery. And three, there was testimony in the record at trial from both Dr. Stuart Kutz and Mike Miller of the bank that the bank had been told by Dr. Kutz that serial substitutions, to use his words in his testimony, would not serve Mr. Keenan's best interests. So what did the bank do? The bank did not file an overt objection, but did seek discovery of the allegations of harm looking toward this hearing coming up in March of 2008. It had a right to defend its service.
Well, what serial substitutions are we talking about? It seems like we're talking about a substitution, one substitution.
From Dr. Cook's perspective, when he used the term serial substitution, he was referring to Mr. Keenan's earlier petition to terminate conservatorship in 2005, which was resolved with Mr. Keenan's mother and with the appointment of Colorado State Bank. Then there was the new petition to terminate conservatorship in 2008. And I can only tell you that it was Dr. Kutz's testimony that he viewed this additional request for a substitute conservator as an example of a serial substitution or a request leading toward the risk of serial substitutions, which would not serve Mr. Keenan's best interests until he found a conservator willing to comply with his wishes.
Did Dr. Kurtz examine the issue of the animosity and whether that would have an adverse effect on Mr. Keenan?
I don't recall. He was asked to opine on whether the conservatorship should be terminated. That was his principal focus upon the court's appointment of him for evaluation. I don't believe, Your Honor, in his report that he particularly or specifically evaluated the relationship between Mr. Keenan and the bank.
Mr. Kroner, any time you start fueling litigation from the assets of a trust, doesn't that ring alarm bells to somebody in charge that this is not what ought to be done for the benefit of the beneficiary? I mean, regardless of whether you're defending legitimate complaints, and the bank feels that it's been unfairly singled out or vilified. Mm-hmm. Isn't this time for adult supervision to say this has to be resolved in some way? And when you add that to the assessment of a surcharge against a trustee, no matter how small, how can you not say that fiduciary obligations were breached?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, with regard to the assessment of the surcharge, if you look at that in the context of the court's order, that was a charge in the nature of an equitable tax. It wasn't a finding of breach of fiduciary duty. In fact, the court specifically found that after trial that the bank acted reasonably. But as to the exacerbation of litigation, it was the bank's position throughout that the exacerbation of litigation, unfortunately, was attributable to Mr. Keenan. For example, the petition to terminate conservatorship at the hearing of October 15, 2007, after parties had prepared for hearing, as was appropriate given Dr. Kutz's evaluation, suddenly transformed into a petition to remove the bank when Mr. Keenan testified under cross-examination. I don't mind having a conservatorship. I just want a different conservator. It's reasonable to infer at that time that he's not saying he doesn't mind maintenance of a conservatorship if he believes he doesn't need a conservatorship. So that changed the picture. Was it adversity, Your Honor, and exacerbation of litigation on the part of the conservator, Colorado State Bank, when Mr. Keenan forced Colorado State Bank to defend its fiduciary conduct against allegations in those pleadings in the fall of 2007 of actual mental and physical harm? There is a provision in CRS section 14503, at that time it was 15-14-112, for a simple best interest removal without a finding of fault. And in fact, that's exactly what the trial court did with its order in November and December of 2007, particularly the December 13, 2007 order, where the trial court did remove the bank, but it was based on a best interest determination. And that's a determination without fault. In that order, the court directed the bank to submit its accountings It did so, submitting its accountings within proper time, and at that point, the bank does have a right to defend its accountings. So the problem, Your Honor, is perhaps that these statutes authorized the bank's reasonable conduct in defending its service, in advocating for the propriety of its accountings, and protecting against allegations that felt were unfounded of breach of duty.
And why would the court have to compel the report of accountings? That'd be a good idea for the bank to voluntarily account to its beneficiary?
Well, the bank anticipated accounting, final accounting. It had actually voluntarily filed an interim accounting, and it fully anticipated filing a final accounting. It was aware that that was required for its discharge, and so the order of December 13, 2007, there was no necessity to compel an accounting, and that wasn't what the court did. The court simply directed that in filing the final accountings, those would be due 60 days from the order. So there was full expectation that the bank should file the accounting.
The $198,000 in attorney fees are what the bank spent essentially in 2008 and 2009 defending its accounting.
Correct. Okay.
And approximately how much in attorney fees had been incurred by the bank up through the end of 2007? In other words, you spent $198,000 of Mr. Keenan's money seeking to recover or justify how much in attorney fees?
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I can answer that question precisely. Those fees were not demarcated in that fashion. Significantly less than those litigation fees. I can only tell you, Your Honor, that three experienced Boulder District Court judges with seasoning and probate reviewed those explicit fee statements that were itemized and found them to be appropriate. Further, no hearing was requested on the bank's fee petitions.
Weren't the $198,000 in fees approved by a newly appointed judge who had no prior involvement with this case?
That's correct. He had the benefit of reviewing the file and the records.
Okay.
He has had experience in probate, Judge Mulvihill in Boulder County.
Narrower question. One of Mr. Keenan's issues is $1,945 that he claims was improperly billed by the bank against the income trust.
Yes.
Forgetting about the propriety of the billing, does the bank agree that $1,945 came out of the income trust?
It does not.
Okay, where did it come from?
The payment for the extraordinary services came out of the conservatorship.
Okay, let me come back to my question. Are there three accounts here, or are there two? In other words, there's an income trust and there's a disability trust. Is there a third account that has money sitting in it?
May I respond, Your Honor?
Yes.
Two accounts managed by the bank, a conservatorship account, a disability trust account. The income trust account was separately managed by the income trustee, Patricia Keenan.
So the $1,945 did not come out of the income trust?
It did not. Those fees were paid out of the conservatorship, and the conservatorship paid those extraordinary fees because there had been multiple Social Security payments that month. Those multiple payments would have led to a Medicaid disqualification for being over-resourced, and so the conservatorship account was brought down under the Medicaid cap by that payment.
The conservatorship account is different from the assets that are held in these two trusts.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
We thank the court for its consideration.
Judge, I'll respond particularly to your last question. The Miller Income Trust is a vehicle to protect the income that Matthew Keenan had, which was about $3,000, from going over the $1,849 that he is allowed to, that is his income for living expenses every month. And you can never have more than $2,000 in a conservatorship account. That's what the Miller Trust is for. The bank did it backwards.
Is the Miller Trust the income trust?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The bank did it backwards. They had this third account, which should never have existed. That account took the $3,000 in every month and then gave whatever was in excess to $1,849 to the Miller Trust. That's backwards. The account itself monthly violated the strictures of Medicaid by being over $2,000 in resources. So it is disingenuous to suggest that somehow this $1,849 came from anything other than the assets that properly belong to the income trust. Your Honor, in conclusion, it's probably hubris for many attorneys to say that this is a watershed case, but I will say with all respect to the court and to the parties in this case, this is what this is. In El Paso County, we have monthly lots of people that come back from Iraq and Afghanistan who suffer traumatic brain injury. And when that happens, often they have to get guardianships or conservatorships. We maybe built the structure with the idea of taking care of the elderly, where the progression tends to be negative. But at the end of the day, somebody who suffers this terrible event and who loses civil liberties because of it needs to know that there is a system in place which is supportive and which in the end promotes and does not frustrate the ability to be restored one's rights as a Colorado citizen. Thank you, Your Honor.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. We will issue a written opinion in due course.